Morning, everyone. The next matter on the court's calendar this morning is State of Minnesota versus Michael Guzik. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. The format for our argument this morning on WebEx is the same as it would be if we were at the Judicial Center. Each attorney will have 15 minutes for his or her argument, and appellant's counsel will have a 5-minute period for rebuttal argument if desired. Each attorney should state his or her name for the record immediately before beginning oral argument. And at this time, we will hear for counsel for appellant Christopher Guzik.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Elizabeth Duell, and I, along with Ryan Geary, represent Christopher Guzik, who is the appellant in this appeal. Mr. Guzik seeks reversal of a sentence for conviction of third-degree murder. He seeks reversal principally because the sentencing court abused its discretion in denying his motion for a downward dispositional departure and a downward durational departure. I would like to focus most of my time on the durational departure argument, but I do want to spend a couple minutes addressing the equal protection argument first. Before I do so, I would like to outline the facts in this case. Mr. Guzik is a drug addict. On June 3, 2016, he was going through heroin withdrawal, which was not an unknown feeling to him. A friend of his, CLA, reached out to him asking for marijuana. Mr. Guzik, needing some heroin, offered her heroin instead. He knew CLA was a drug user, as that was the context of their relationship. He knew, for example, that she used marijuana and methamphetamine. After some discussion via Facebook Messenger, CLA agreed to the heroin. She and her friend picked up Mr. Guzik, and they went to meet his drug dealer. Mr. Guzik acted as a go-between between his dealer and CLA. As stated in the plea hearing, his dealer provided a half a gram of heroin, and CLA provided $70. Mr. Guzik was the hand-to-hand transfer. His only payment in this case was some of the heroin to ease his withdrawal symptoms. During the plea hearing, Mr. Guzik stated that he never intended CLA to die, and he was very sad that she did. Mr. Guzik is guilty of the crime to which he pled guilty. He entered a straight plea with no plea agreement. At sentencing, the
sentence... Doesn't that operate as a waiver of any challenge to his conviction?
Your Honor, this court has discretion to review issues that were not raised at the district court level. In our reply brief, we cited numerous cases where this court reviewed issues that were not raised in the district court level and were seen waived. This court specifically in State v. Wiskow reviewed an Apprendi-Blakely argument that was not raised in the district court. Welfare of INA used its discretion to review the appellant's restitution argument not raised in the district court. So in this case, Your Honor.
My understanding is that you're not contesting or appealing the conviction, just the sentence. Is that right?
Your Honor, we are appealing the sentence. We're asking the court to look at the equal protection argument because we believe that the cases that came after Carruthers wrongly limited the issue to simply married couples. So we are asking the court.
What do you mean you want us to look at it?
Your Honor, there are several cases after Carruthers where this court and the Court of Appeals found that Carruthers limited the holding strictly to married couples. We're asking the court to overturn at least this court's decisions that it was limited to married couples only, thereby allowing the joint acquisition and joint possession defense for defendants in these cases.
So you want us to overrule it, but not change his conviction? I don't understand how the issue is raised in this case.
Your Honor, in this court's discretion and in the interest of justice, my understanding is this court could review that issue, even though we didn't raise it in the trial court level. In the trial court level, we did ask that the court find that there's no probable cause under Carruthers. So we're raising this equal protection argument before this court.
But you don't want us to do anything to his conviction?
Your Honor, we would ask that you vacate the conviction under the equal protection issue.
Okay.
Okay. Your Honor, and then in the alternative, what we would ask is that we be able to use this in the downward durational departure as an element that made this case less serious than the average cases. If there are no further questions, I'll continue this argument.
Go ahead, counsel.
Thank you. So at sentencing, the sentencing court reviewed the dispositional departure factors, found that some supported a downward dispositional departure and denied the motion. And then it denied the motion for a downward durational departure, stating that there was, in just a few sentences, that there was no basis for a downward durational departure, and sentenced Mr. Guzik to 84 months, which was the bottom of the box. We've already discussed the equal protection arguments, Your Honor. I will briefly say, in this case, Mr. Guzik and CLA were friends, they were drug users, and well known to each other. This is not a dealer-user relationship. Mr. Guzik had to go to his own dealers called the Twins to obtain the heroin because he did not have any. And State v. Carruthers, the husband and wife were in the same situation, but they could not be charged because of joint possession due to their relationship.
These kinds of third degree murder cases are challenging, I agree, but I'm not seeing exactly how the factual scenario that underlies the conviction is significantly less serious than a typical third degree.
Your Honor, the typical third degree that I've found has been where the drug dealer who's making money on the transactions, making a profit, is the one that's charged. In this case, we have a drug user who shared his drugs and vice versa with the victim, in this case, CLA.
I would just say that that is the typical situation that we see on these appeals at the Court of Appeals. It's and not the drug dealer, it's friends.
It's friends. And didn't he sort of get paid? I mean, he received drugs for doing this. It might be a more compelling argument if they both pitched in and then shared in the drugs, but she essentially compensated him by obtaining the drugs. So in a sense, he did get paid.
That's correct, Your Honor. I've seen cases where the user also got charged, but typically in cases, it's the drug dealer who's making a monetary profit. This case is different because it's at the user level, and both of them were drug users, and that was the nature of their relationship. His payment was a little bit of the heroin, but in this case, he was the hand-to-hand transfer, and that was what he received in response for doing that. Your Honor, if this issue is denied the equal protection, we would just ask that you find that the sentencing court abused her discretion regarding the durational departure. But I would like to get to that in just a minute, unless you have further questions.
Let's talk about the dispositional departure. And you didn't spend much time in your brief talking about the court's finding that he was not particularly amenable to probation because of his absconding from court and not complying with the conditional release terms. And I will tell you, all three of us are former district court judges. And when I used to put people on conditional release, I often would say, we'll see how you do during this period of time, and that will help me determine what your sentence will be. And absconding and then continuing to use, I think that supports the district court not abusing its discretion when it found that he wasn't particularly amenable to probation. And so I'd like you to focus your arguments on that part of her decision.
Sure, Your Honor. So I agree that the sentencing court went through the trog factors and evaluated them. She did find that several factors weighed in favor of a dispositional departure, and that included his remorse when he was in front of court, the support of his family and friends, which she mentioned both at the plea hearing and at the sentencing, the support letters that we presented, and his attitude in court. In this case, Your Honor, the sentencing court does not have unlimited discretion in this case. There are cases that we cited in our brief where this court will review that, and the abuse of discretion standard is not toothless. That's Justice Alito and Gall. During the sentencing, the sentencing court made several statements that indicated to me that even though there were factors in the dispositional departure that supported that, she was still not going to grant it. And those statements were that this was a murder case, that drugs were involved. She specifically said that drugs are a scourge in our community, and that She had been sentencing people for drug offenses all morning. In addition, Your Honor, Mr. Guzik had done well in treatment. He did relapse, and we did have issues with that, but he did complete some treatment programs, which we laid out in our sentencing memorandum attached to our brief. He also did very well in the in-custody treatment program. Yes.
Judge Larkin, I'm aware of Curtis, in which this court reversed refusal to grant a downward dispositional departure. And we did that because there was no indication that the district court had considered the arguments for and against departure. Here it's clear, based on your recitation of the record, that the district court did that. Can you cite us to any case where we've reversed refusal to grant a downward dispositional departure for a reason other than failure to consider the arguments made in support of and against?
Your Honor, I can't think of any, and in preparing for this argument, I did not see any. And I agree that Judge Younger did consider the trog factors. I would point the court, however, to the language that she used during the sentencing about her reliance on how the elements of the offense were the more important factors. And she said, she discussed that somebody died, that the legislature intended this to be a prison sentence. And Your Honors, the last line that she said in the sentencing was that somebody died and justice demands a prison sentence. I just asked this court to consider the Judge Younger's words during the sentencing. She said,
counsel, I mean, aren't just Judge Younger's words, that's the law. I mean, that's the presumptive sentence. You're asking us to conclude that the judge abused her discretion because she imposed the presumptive sentence for the elements of the offense. There's nothing wrong with doing that. I mean, a departure is to do something other than what's required. So I don't understand how there's an abuse of discretion to follow the law.
Your Honors, the only thing I would point you to is that if the elements of the offense are the primary focus of a departure, no one would get a departure, because to plead guilty or to be convicted means that you've met the elements of the offense. So it's the range of dispositional departure factors and durational departure factors that would result in a departure in these cases. And in this case, the sentencing court focused on the death and the drugs. I think in this case, Your Honors, the durational departure argument, I'd like to spend more time on the durational departure argument, given that the sentencing court only spent a moment or two on its consideration.
Proceed.
Okay. Prior to discussing the departures, the sentencing court said the law in this regard is clear. People who commit this crime go to prison. She said drugs are, quote, a scourge on our community, and those who perpetuate the dealing of drugs in the community have a responsibility for that. In this case, as stated earlier, Mr. Guzik was not a drug dealer. He was a go-between. CLA reached out to him, not the other way around. And he arranged the drug deal knowing his only payment was some of the heroin that CLA received. We don't have a drug dealer in this case selling large amounts of drugs on the street corner to people and profiting off of their deaths. This is a drug addict to drug addict transfer. Further, this was a small amount of drugs. It was a half a gram of heroin for a small amount of money. And this is not a case that we would expect that someone would die in this case, given that amount after it was split in half. It is true that the sentencing court has discretion. However, the court sentencing power is not absolute. This court can correct the sentencing court if it, quote, has a strong feeling that the sentence is inappropriate and its collective collegial experience that a sanction is disproportionate to the severity of the offense, end quote. That's State v. Benzula. A district court abuses its discretion if it fails to consider reasons for departing from the presumptive sentence. There are two published cases, and this court mentioned one, that I did not cite, but I would like to cite here. State v. Curtis said, the trial court must consider circumstances supporting a downward durational departure from the presumptive sentence. And then State v. Mendoza, that is 638 Northwest 2nd, 480. It's from 2002 from this court, said, citing Curtis, if the district court has discretion to depart from a presumptive sentence, it must exercise that discretion by deliberately considering circumstances for and against departure. We cited in our sentencing memorandum other third-degree murder cases resulting in departure. At the time of sentencing, as counted by the Guidelines Commission, there were 58 cases with Mr. Guzik's crime. 18 received a downward dispositional departure, 2 received a stay of imposition, and then 6 received a downward durational departure. One of the unpublished cases we cited in our brief was Walker v. State. In that case, Walker traded her methadone to Pavey for drugs. Pavey sold Walker's methadone to others, including a person who died. They were both charged with third-degree murder, and Walker pled guilty while Pavey was convicted at trial. In that case, Walker received a downward dispositional departure to a stayed sentence with a year in jail. In State v. Williams, another unpublished case cited in our brief, Williams was a drug dealer who sold drugs to NR and her boyfriend, and NR died from a heroin overdose. He was convicted of third-degree murder, and in that case, he was the drug dealer. In that case, what was interesting was NR's boyfriend agreed to testify in exchange for the state's agreement that it would not be used against him. He had a long history of drug addiction, and NR did not use drugs before, but he introduced her to heroin, and they used it daily at the height of their drug use. They bought heroin from Williams and Williams' cousin, and then NR was with her when she died. In another case, State v. Burrell, Burrell sold 4 bags of heroin to 2 separate groups of people. 1 person from each group died, and she was sentenced to 2 consecutive sentences of 86 months. In this case, Mr. Guzik was charged, but his dealer was not. The statute in third-degree murder encompasses so much conduct, there is little prohibiting the state from picking the person they choose to charge and ignoring everyone else. In this case, Mr. Guzik admitted that CLA paid $70 for 0.5 gram of heroin, which they split. Had she not died, it's likely that he would never have been charged with anything. But if he was, I believe he would have been charged with 4th-degree drug sale, which would have resulted in a 15-month stayed sentence. It's clear that he had the intent to obtain the heroin and provide it to CLA, but he had no intent of her death. To sentence him to 84 months in prison for 4th-degree drug sale that resulted in an unintended and unforeseen death is not fair in this case. He was not a drug dealer, and he had no intent for her to die, and they were friends. And at the plea hearing, he expressed how sad he was that she did die. He expressed the same thing at the PSI. At the time, he was going through withdrawals and needed heroin to ease those symptoms. When CLA messaged him for marijuana, he suggested heroin, to which she agreed. Mr. Guzik did not corrupt her. He knew from past experiences that she was a drug user, and there was no reason to think that a small amount of heroin would be a problem. Her urine screen revealed that she had the opiate, codeine, morphine, nicotine, and continine in her system as well.
Could the marshal let us see the clock? I believe we're approaching the end.
I'm sorry, it expired.
All right, thank you, I thought so. All right, you'll have 5 minutes on rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, counsel for the state, would you please introduce yourself before beginning your argument?
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is George Kennedy. I appear on behalf of respondent, the state of Minnesota. Your honors, starting with the sentencing argument, appellant's argument is flawed for a few reasons. As the district court was pointing out at the beginning of her sentencing comments, the guidelines are mandatory, and there is no discretion to depart unless or until the district court finds that there are substantial and compelling reasons, either for a durational or a dispositional departure. Even once grounds for departure are identified, the departure itself is not automatic. It's discretionary at that point. So in this case, there was no abuse of discretion in imposing a guideline sentence. First, the district court did not decide that there were substantial and compelling reasons for a durational departure or a dispositional departure. The defendant did not demonstrate that he was particularly amenable to probation or treatment, and there was insufficient evidence that this was substantially less serious than the typical third-degree murder case. when the court was going through its analysis, it looked at the records, it looked at the information that was provided, which means that there was no abuse of discretion because it evaluated all of the testimony and information that was available. There's also no error of law here that the appellant can point to. So there was no abuse of discretion in imposing the guideline sentence. Turning to the waiver argument, a guilty plea waives all non-jurisdictional defects in a criminal case. The defendant stated that he was guilty multiple times during the plea. In multiple paragraphs of the plea petition, he reaffirmed his guilt. His guilt was reaffirmed at sentencing by his attorney. So those arguments are all waived. Additionally, the cases that appellant points to regarding the court's discretion to review an argument that wasn't raised below, I looked through those cases. They all deal with arguments that were never raised before the district court and were raised for the first time ever on appeal. This is not such a situation. Here, the appellant made his omnibus challenge. He challenged probable cause based on the same argument. That argument was denied. He then entered a guilty plea, waiving any future challenges. So this isn't the case where it's appropriate to review that argument. Frankly, I was surprised to see it in a brief that was labeled a sentencing appeal. I did not expect to see a merits argument show up there, and I apologize if my response was brief. I only had 10 days. If there are no questions, I ask the court to affirm the guideline sentence in this case.
I'm not seeing any questions. Thank you. Is there a rebuttal argument?
Just briefly. First, what we're arguing regarding equal protection is that it's simply not fair that a married couple would not have any culpability when an unmarried couple does. If this court disagrees, then we would ask that that be a factor for the durational departure. Our argument for the durational departure primarily is that the sentencing court only spent one paragraph as written in the transcript on the durational departure. She did not conduct any sort of analysis. She relied on one fact from this case. As I quoted in Mendoza, when the court has discretion to depart, it must exercise that discretion by deliberately considering circumstances for and against departure. In this case, we don't have that. The sentencing court on page 21 of the sentencing transcript spent one paragraph simply saying that because CLA asked for marijuana and Mr. Guzik offered heroin, he was not deserving of a durational departure. And if there are no further questions on that, we would ask that this court reverse the sentence and remand for resentencing and consider the equal protection argument.
Thank you, both of you, for your arguments. The matter is submitted. You'll have our decision within 90 days. That concludes the court's oral.